Great to have you along for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller, and we're going to turn our attention, for a bit at least, to mushrooms. They're having a popularity boom, especially because of their nutritional benefits. And we'll be talking about mushrooms and other vegetables with our guest, Sean Kuhn. Sean is the second time I think he's visited us. He's the co-founder of Vitruvian Farms. It's a certified organic vegetable and mushroom farm in McFarland. He's the primary farmer on the team researching, troubleshooting, and implementing fixes for just about every produce growing issue you can imagine. He's also knowledgeable about food, our food system, and nutritional aspects of the food, all the food they grow. So I hope you'll join in with your questions for Sean. Maybe you're interested in growing mushrooms, or what would you like to know about growing greens, even when the weather turns cold like it is? What other growing questions do you have? Give a call. The number, 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us to talk@wpr.org. Sean Kuhn, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Hey, thanks for having me back, Larry.
Let's talk about, just to start, let's talk about Vitruvian Farms. How'd you get it started?
Randomly met my business partner, Tommy, in college. We were both studying different things, and we started learning about things that were that we thought were going wrong with the food system, how food is got tons of pesticides and herbicides on it, and we kind of veered off our original path that we intended for college, decided we wanted to help make the food system better, and we decided to get into farming.
Yeah, yes, that it's crazy in a way to think, you know, just a chance meeting turns into a friendship, which turns into a business partnership. What kinds of products do you offer now?
Yeah, so we grow a wide array of vegetables, everything from salad greens, heads of lettuce, scallions, turnips, green onions, pretty much most things. And then we also grow specialty mushrooms indoors. We grow the mushrooms year-round, so we're producing things like shiitake, maitake, lion's mane, oyster, and black king mushrooms.
Yeah, a lot of them, and I want to get into that. But I also wanted to talk for at least a minute about you've got a store, grocery store. How's that working?
Yep, we just opened our store a little over 2 years ago. It kind of grew out of previous to the pandemic, we were like 80% wholesale to restaurants, and when they were shutting restaurants down, we needed to find a different way to sell our produce to people. And so we started an online store and a home delivery service. We started aggregating stuff that we weren't producing from other local growers and makers to make a more economical delivery system. And after the pandemic ended, we built a building and essentially opened a locally focused grocery store offering all those same products that we offered and that we still offer through our home delivery service. So we essentially have a mini grocery store on the farm with a focus on organic products and locally made products.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And the delivery, is it like a CSA or how does it work, the delivery?
Yeah, so we do a CSA and we offer home delivery for that. We run a CSA for about 20 weeks during the summer. And some people get delivery. You can get that delivered right to your door. We also have our online store, so you can just pick out anything you want on a week-to-week basis and then get that delivered right to your door.
Yeah, and your store is located, of course, McFarland.
Yep, right on the farm. So we're about 15 minutes south of Madison, right off of Highway 51.
Yeah. Well, last time you were with us, we had just started talking about mushrooms, but we kind of ran out of time. So let's start there. Why are, mushrooms are getting a lot of really good press these days. Why is that the case, do you think?
I think there was a couple really good documentaries that came out in the last 5 years or so that sparked people's interest. And basically, there's a lot of research going on right now with a lot of compounds in the mushrooms that we're just kind of beginning to understand. But they're finding a lot of health-promoting benefits with those compounds, things like regeneration for your brain cells, immune system benefits. And as that research is coming out and it's being publicized by people like Paul Stamets, a lot of people have caught on to that recently, and so they're trying to introduce more mushrooms into their diet.
And I guess if you look at mushrooms, you think about button mushrooms and some of the lion's mane and some of the ones that you mentioned. And again, remind me which varieties you grow. And I'm wondering if some are better than others when it comes to the nutritional side of things.
Yeah, so we're growing 5 different varieties right now. They're wood-eating mushrooms, so in comparison to button mushrooms are secondary decomposers, so they're actually, their food source is a compost, taking vegetables, basically vegetable-like products that have already been decomposed one time and then producing mushrooms. Our mushrooms are actually directly decomposing wood sawdust. And so we're growing shiitake, maitake, lion's mane, oyster, and black kings. And yeah, I would say they all have, it gets kind of complicated with the different nutritional aspects of the different mushrooms, but I would say all the specialty mushrooms that we're growing, I would say are a little bit higher on the nutritional value than something like a button mushroom.
Okay. So for the home gardener, somebody who said, okay, I want to give mushrooms a try. What varieties do you suggest for a first try?
One of the easiest things that you could do if you wanted to dabble in mushrooms would be planting some almond agaricus mushrooms, which this is a really simple method. So if you spread wood mulch in your yard or under trees or something like that, you can buy spawn from a local company. There's one in northern Wisconsin called Field and Forest. You buy some mushroom spawn, which is the mycelium that's already growing, and you just kind of sprinkle that into the wood chips and wait anywhere, depending on the season, anywhere from 1 to 2 months, and the mushroom grows out, and then they'll start basically popping out of the ground. That's probably one of the easiest ways you could dabble in growing mushrooms. Another very simple way to grow mushrooms at home would be growing oyster mushrooms on straw. That's actually how we started growing mushrooms. I mentioned before that these are wood decomposing mushrooms, but the oyster mushroom is very prolific, so it will actually take straw as a food source. So what you would want to do is you'd want to heat that straw in water to kill competing organisms. It's basically like a pasteurization. So if you could bring the straw up to about 160 degrees or so for around 2 hours, you kill most competing organisms that the mushroom would have to compete with. Then you drain that straw out, and then you could pack it into 5-gallon buckets. You could pack it into plastic bags, and then you basically poke holes in the bag or the bucket, and you inoculate it with some grain spawn. And give it time to incubate, and after a period of 2 to 4 weeks, mushrooms should be popping out of the container.
And maybe you have more mushrooms than you know what to do with them.
Yep, they're very fast growing.
So what about location? What kind of location works the best?
Well, if you want to optimize the growing conditions, there's really 2 different main phases for growing the mushroom. The first is incubation. So that's the period after you've treated your substrate to kill competing organisms and you've inoculated it with your grain spawn. Most of these mushrooms typically grow best around 65 to 70 degrees Fahrenheit. If they get warmer than that, the mushroom, it's not a favorable environment for the mushroom to grow. So if you can keep it somewhere in that temperature range, they're going to grow out the quickest. Then when you fruit them, what you want to do is you want to decrease the temperature something more around 60 to 65 degrees. And that cold is one of the signals the mushroom mycelium uses to know that it's time to produce fruit bodies. So during incubation, somewhere dark, somewhere that's 65, 70 degrees, and then when it's time to fruit, you want to introduce them to fresh air, and then you also want them to grow out in a very humid environment. Mushrooms are, the fruit bodies are 90% water, essentially. So we keep our mushrooms, when they're fruiting, around 85 to 95% relative humidity. You could achieve that in a very simple way by having them in a shaded area where you run a garden sprinkler once in a while. If you want to get more technical, you could put them in some sort of plastic canopy with a humidification system or like a mister, because as that mushroom is growing, if you're not supplying humidity, then they'll kind of dry out.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. How do you like to store mushrooms? I mean, in your situation, you're growing a heck of a lot of mushrooms, but even a home gardener might wind up with more than he or she needs instantly. How do you store them?
Yeah, the best way to store them would be putting them into a paper bag, closing the paper bag, and then keeping it in the crisper in your refrigerator. And depending on how fresh they were when you harvested them, they could last at least 2 weeks in there, maybe up to 4 weeks. They might dry out a little bit on the higher end there. But a paper bag is much preferred over plastic, because in a plastic bag, the mushroom will kind of release a little bit of moisture, and then that moisture is trapped in there. And there's a tendency for the mushrooms to get kind of soggy and rotty. So the paper bag allows just enough of that humidity to escape from the bag while still keeping enough in that the mushroom doesn't dry out too fast.
Yeah, that makes sense. Sean Kuhn, our guest today, the co-founder of Vitruvian Farms. It's a certified organic vegetable and mushroom farm in McFarland. Questions for him, maybe about mushrooms, maybe about other types of herbs or vegetables. I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you along today for Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Sean Kuhn of Vitruvian Farms, a certified organic vegetable and mushroom farm located in and near McFarland, Wisconsin. Great to have him with us. Questions for him, I hope you'll join in. The number is 800-642-1234. Email to talk@WPR.org. Next week on Garden Talk, by the way, we'll talk with Liz Freemuth from The Garden Hoe about adaptable plants, and then we'll hear about a group that is researching the pawpaw plant. But right now, we zeroed in a bit on mushroom, but taking other vegetable or herb questions as well at 800-642-1234. You could email to talk@WPR.org. Amy in Iola, thank you for joining us. What's on your mind?
Hi, Larry. Hi, Sean. I started mushrooms on logs several years ago, like four. And I started two varieties. One was shiitake. The other one, I don't remember. And the shiitake grew really well. And then the other one grew the following year. And now they aren't growing. And I'm wondering if I picked them incorrectly. Am I supposed to snip them off or pull them out? I did pull bark off if I pulled the mushrooms out. Or do they just not last? But I have no mushrooms now.
Okay.
Yeah, you can pick those or cut them off. I'd probably recommend picking them off. Where do you have them stored?
They're on the ground, on a pallet kind of situation. It's actually on two other logs. They're in the shade.
And is it shaded?
And I water them.
Yeah.
Yes, and I water them.
Okay. Yeah, they can sometimes be, like, they'll naturally flush. I can speak more to shiitake on logs. I think a lot of them will naturally flush maybe twice a year, once in spring and once in fall. they're looking for specific temperatures is when they're going to want a fruit. And it sounds like you're keeping them watered. I know outdoor growers who are using shiitake log production, they actually dunk their logs. They submerge them completely in water for like 24 hours, I believe. And then you take them out, and that will kind of initiate a flush. It'll rehydrate the log, kind of cold snaps the mushrooms so that the mushrooms will produce. So I would say dunking the logs could be something that you could try. You definitely want to keep them in a mostly shaded area, maybe 70% shade or so, so it's not too hot for them. And then you can additionally run a sprinkler every so often, maybe a couple times a week, just to keep them moist. But you shouldn't have a problem picking them off. That should be totally fine. I know a lot of growers that do that. And I think you would be fine cutting them off as well.
All right, Amy, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Myron emailed to ask how to select fresh mushrooms. What do you look for?
I would look for mushrooms that haven't dried out too much, mushrooms that you don't see any sort of discoloration on them, like any sort of green or blue kind of mold-looking contamination. Sometimes with oyster mushrooms, you'll see a little bit of white fuzz on the top of the caps. That's actually just the, if it's, as long as it's white, that's typically actually just the mycelium of the mushroom itself, and that's totally fine. But if you see any sort of other kind of mold looking contamination, that would be blue or green, you'd want to steer clear of that. Any sort of like black spotting on the undersides of the caps, definitely if they're dried out, although if they're dried out, you can rehydrate them. It's not necessarily that they're bad to eat. It's just that they're a little bit on the older side. And then I typically look for mushrooms where the cap is not super frayed, where it's relatively intact.
There you go. And thanks very much for that question, Myron. Appreciate it very much. In your experience, what are the more difficult? Let's say we've got an advanced grower here. What are the more difficult ones to raise, and what are the best ways to do them?
Well, I would say out of everything that we're growing right now, the trickiest are the lion's mane and the maitake. Lion's mane is tricky because they get really finicky with too much airflow. So in our mushroom fruit chambers, the mushrooms are breathing in oxygen and they're exhaling CO2 just like we are. So we constantly have to bring fresh air into the fruit chamber so the mushroom can breathe and develop properly. But with lion's mane, they're very prone to drying out. So if you have too much airflow in there, they can start to turn yellow or they won't form properly. So finding the proper balance of keeping the room humidified while bringing in fresh air, but not having too much air blowing on the mushrooms is a very challenging part of growing those. The maitake, which is also known as hen of the woods, is a newer mushroom that we've been growing. It's not wildly cultivated because it's extremely tricky. And I would say growers don't fully have it understood what the different parameters are for successfully growing maitake indoors, but it has a very different fruiting habit than most other mushrooms. With most of our mushrooms, during the incubation phase, we don't want them to enter primordia formation, which basically means they're starting to produce their mushroom heads. With the maitake, we actually want them to start fruiting during incubation. So they actually start their fruit process much earlier than the other mushrooms before we bring them over to the fruit chambers. So I would say maitake and the lion's mane are two of our more challenging mushrooms to grow.
And you mentioned your fruiting chambers, and you know, that brings to mind, what do your fruiting chambers look like?
Yeah, we have a couple different fruiting chambers. Some of them are kind of, you could think of them as like a little grow tent. They're mylar plastic walls that are enclosed. We have fans bringing fresh air into the rooms, and we have humidifiers set up in the room. So we have these little misters that go off on a timer, and that atomizes water, creates kind of a fog, and keeps the humidity of the room oscillating between 85% to 95% humidity. We also have a different type of fruit chamber that's a little bit newer, which is essentially a refurbished shipping container cooler. So it was a shipping container that was refrigerated, used on the high seas that we bought new, and basically the same outfitting where we're bringing fresh air into the room with fans. We have humidifiers running inside the room, and then there's shelving inside the rooms to hold the mushroom blocks.
Pretty cool. And you're certified organic. You know, what does that mean when growing mushrooms?
For the mushrooms, so it mostly comes down to the food source. So we have two different food sources for the mushrooms. The shiitake and maitake grow on a substrate that is 70% red oak sawdust and 30% organic wheat midds. Wheat midds is kind of like it's kind of like wheat bran with a little bit more chaff and things like that in there.
Yeah.
It's a source of nitrogen. The rest of the mushrooms that we grow are, it's a mixture of 50% red oak sawdust and 50% soybean hulls, which is a byproduct from soybean processing. When it comes to organic certification, there really isn't any certified organic sawdust. So how the organic regulations look at that is they look at, as long as it hasn't been treated with anything, they consider it fine, a natural substance for the mushrooms to use as a feed source. But then that, those agricultural products that we add, which is the soybean hulls and the wheat mids, those need to be certified organic, because those would have a much greater likelihood of being contaminated with a pesticide or something like that if it was grown non-organically.
Do we have that growing organically in our state?
The soybean hulls?
Yeah.
We do. We used to mix our own substrate from loose soybean hulls and from loose sawdust. And more recently, we've been buying a pelleted. It's basically a company that takes those two ingredients and uses pressure to compress it into little pellets, kind of like what you would use to heat a wood stove. They look just like that. We found this company that makes a really great substrate for us, so we're buying that from out of state right now.
Yeah. But you do a lot of business with a lot of other local groups, and we'll get into that a little bit more later. But I'm wondering about eating. You know, you've got I think most of us are very used to something like a button mushroom, and you can use it, you know, sautéed. You can do whatever you want with them. But what about some of these other mushrooms like lion's mane? How do you like to eat lion's mane?
Yeah. The one thing I always recommend people do is look up Paul Stamets on YouTube. You can listen to him. He's a really smart mycologist, but something that people don't always recognize is that you should always cook your mushrooms and always cook them well. Mushrooms can have compounds that are slightly toxic. Those compounds, if not cooked, those compounds break down completely to inert substances once you cook the mushroom. So number one, no matter how you're cooking them, you always want to cook your mushrooms well. And mushrooms tend to hold a really good texture, even if you cook them for a long time. For me, I'm mostly sautéing all of my mushrooms. So I'm sautéing them in a pan with either olive oil or butter, and then adding them to whatever dish I'm working with. But baking is also an option. I don't necessarily boil my mushrooms, but I think sautéing is probably one of the most popular things to do. Yeah. Interesting thing with lion's mane is you can make little kind of crab cakes with them. So you kind of just tear up the lion's mane mushroom into little shreds, And then you can sometimes mix that with like a tuna or something like that and breadcrumbs. And you can make these little pancakes and you just fry those in a pan. It's essentially a little crab cake because the lion's mane, a lot of people think it has a somewhat seafood-like flavor to it.
That sounds good. I'm hungry. I wish you were here in the studio with me with some of those all made up and ready to eat. Thanks, John, for that. Sandy in Delavan has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Sandy.
Hi. So here's my situation. I'll make a long story short. About a year ago, I found a brown paper bag in the back of my refrigerator. Turned out to be some maitake that I had bought and unbelievably forgotten about. And they were all dried up. Now, at the time, I didn't know if it was safe or not, so I just got rid of them. But something like that, I mean, they were basically just dehydrated mushrooms. Would they have been safe to eat or...
All right. Yep. What about Sandy's maitakes?
Yep, that's happened to me too. If you find your mushrooms, they're all dried out and you don't see any sort of green or blue mold on them or anything like that, I would say they're more than likely safe to eat. And basically what you can do is you can just let them soak in a cold water bath for 20, 30 minutes and those mushrooms will kind of rehydrate. Because when you go to the store, you can buy already dehydrated mushrooms. You basically would cook those in the same exact way as you would the already dried mushrooms. You would rehydrate them and then just use them as normal. If you're not seeing any visible colored contamination, then they're most likely, exactly like you said, just dehydrated.
Sandy, there you go. You might have been able to eat those maitakes. Oh, boy. Brian emailed... He says his mother is allergic to mushrooms. Is that a common allergy? And what are good mushroom alternatives for recipes that call for mushrooms?
Some people are we're kind of in this realm right now where a lot of people are trying mushrooms they've never tried before. I have heard of people being allergic to different types. I know I gave my dad a lion's mane supplement at one point, and he said it thought it made his throat kind of close up. I think it's relatively rare, but different mushrooms can have different reactions with people. I would probably recommend, if you're trying a new mushroom, to try a small amount out at first. And kind of going back to what I said earlier, definitely make sure that you're cooking your mushrooms, because the greatest incidents I ever hear of people having a bad reaction was either that they didn't cook the mushroom or they undercooked the mushroom.
Yeah. So you're sauteing. How long are you sauteing mushrooms, for example?
I'm probably sauteing them for around 15 to 20 minutes.
Okay. So it's a little longer than most of us would think about. So it's good to know, 15 to 20.
And like I said, with the mushroom, mushrooms don't tend to kind of lose their ideal texture if you just cook them a little bit longer. It's not like meat where if you overcook it, it's no longer going to be where you want it to be. So I typically say it's better to play it safe and cook them a little bit more than a little bit less.
Yeah, that does make really good sense. Well, besides mushrooms, what kind of produce are you growing now?
Yeah, so this basically right now we're harvesting a lot of salad mix and lettuce heads out of the greenhouses. We have some red radishes and Hakuri turnips coming out of the greenhouses. We produce microgreens all throughout the year in one of our heated greenhouses. Out in the fields, we're pulling out storage radishes, winter radishes like beauty hearts and daikons. We're pulling out getting ready to pull out our winter storage carrots and storage beets. At this point in the year, most things are out of the fields outside. So we have a couple things that are still growing out there, and we have them covered with frost blankets in anticipation of the cold night coming up on Saturday night. And we're converting over to mostly just greenhouse harvesting at this point.
So, but a lot of different things. And let's talk about those salad mixes. Can we do those well in the home? Can we grow them?
Salad, like during this time of year?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say we're nearing the end of where you can safely be harvesting outside just because the night temperatures are getting pretty low. Like I said, we have some lettuce still growing outside, and we have it covered with a Agribon row cover, which provides 3 to 4 degrees Fahrenheit frost protection. Lettuce is a pretty cold hardy crop, along with spinach. Spinach is more cold hardy. But as soon as these nights start to get around 25 degrees or so, that's about the cutoff for when you could be harvesting your salad from outside. And that's the point where you'd want to be harvesting it from inside, like a greenhouse or a small hoop house structure.
And carrots, I tell you, I was trying to remember the year, but I had some carrots that stayed in the garden really, really late. And those turned out to be very tasty.
Yeah, we are kind of known for our winter carrots. We have a lot of customers that can't wait for us to have them back on the shelves. But the carrot itself can actually withstand pretty cold temperatures, I think at least 20 degrees or so. And the cool thing about them is as the temperature starts dropping, the carrot starts producing more sugar because sugar actually allows it to withstand the freezing temperatures better because it lowers the freezing point. So the side benefit of that is that we end up with a sweeter carrot. So we actually aim to leave our carrots outside so that they frost over a good number of times so that they produce a sweet winter carrot.
Oh, I've got to get over to your place to get some of those sweet winter carrots because I remember those as being so, so tasty. Really, really good.
So, they're very good.
Well, the growing them indoors, not the carrots, but the salad mixes and that sort of thing, how difficult is it for the average homeowner to do that?
It's definitely a more challenging time of year to grow. Spring, early spring and late fall, are not super challenging. Some of the considerations you want to have is you have decreased light, so you might want to space your plants out a little bit further from each other than they would be growing during the summer. You want to consider that they're going to be growing slower than they would during the middle of the year, so it's going to take longer from seeding to harvest than it normally would. And basically, once daylight hours drop below 10 hours a day, which for us is around November 8th, the plants are going to grow extremely slowly at that point. So one thing that you can do is you can get, let's say you're growing some heads of lettuce, you get them basically to 90 to 100% maturity by November 8th. They can kind of just sit there then in your greenhouse until you're ready to harvest for a month, maybe even 2 months. And it's kind of like they're in cold storage. So you want to consider the spacing plants out a little bit more so you don't have disease issues. You want to water your plants less than you would during the summer because they're not growing as much. They're not using as much water. And if you introduce too much water to the growing environment, you're going to increase the risk of getting things like mildew because it's going to be a cold and humid environment. And then you just want to consider that they're going to take longer to grow. And of course, we're talking only about crops that are naturally cold hardy. So things like radishes and turnips and carrots, spinach. You can't use a hoop house to extend the season for all crops because some crops have much higher minimum temperature needs.
Dennis in Two Rivers has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, thanks. Since you mentioned keeping carrots out in the soil longer, I I remember seeing some carrots with some red on them. So I guess that would mean there's some sugar, so they'd be safe to eat. Would that be accurate?
It was red on the carrot or on the greens?
It was on the carrot. Instead of it being orange, it was red, or kind of like a light red.
Yeah.
And it was the whole carrot or just like a small section?
Well, it was a part above the ground.
Okay. I'm not super familiar with seeing that. I'm wondering if maybe it just got a little frost damaged, and was looking a little bit more translucent than normal. Like maybe the skin was a little bit frost damaged on the outside. But what I would generally recommend is if you pull them out of the ground and they're not all mushy and, kind of soggy and whatnot, and they seem like a normal carrot, it's more than likely, good to eat.
Yeah. You can give it a try, Dennis. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You raise beets at all?
Yeah, we grow some beets.
What varieties do you like?
Well, we like growing the red varieties a little bit more because although we like the golden varieties, all the chipmunks on our property really like the golden varieties as well. So. Well, we have a tendency to find a little bite mark in every single beet down the row when we grow the golden varieties. But I think this year we were growing Boldore. And I'd actually have to check back on which variety. I think we switched our variety recently. But, yeah, we grow golden and red beets.
Okay. And actually, Lori had emailed to ask how you select the varieties you grow every year. What do you look for?
With beets, we haven't played around with that many different varieties, but generally speaking, we're looking for something that is not a super long seed to harvest date, and something that just kind of works well with our soil type. So like I said, beets isn't something that we've experimented a ton with different varieties, but the ones that we have just work pretty well for us.
Yeah, and what about the other, I think Lori was asking about the other varieties of veggies that you grow. What do you look for?
Oh, yeah, definitely seed to harvest is something that we consider. Like with our carrots, we tend to grow a faster maturing variety. They're also a little bit of a smaller carrot, which we find that our customers like more out of a fresh carrot for them to be not too large. Disease resistance is a big thing that we're looking for, being certified organic. There are a couple sprays that we could use to combat disease, but we rarely do that. And I find that just selecting the right genetics tends to yield better results than relying on some sort of organic spray. So, for instance, in our greenhouses, we've moved recently to choosing more disease-resistant varieties of tomatoes during the summer. Tomatoes are very disease-prone, especially when grown in a humid greenhouse environment. So it's a balancing act between choosing the absolute best flavored, which we're always after the best tasting, the best textured, produce that we can grow, but balancing that a little bit with natural disease resistance.
Yeah, well, for tomatoes, I'm sure a lot of people are wondering, oh, what kind of tomatoes do they grow? what are the varieties you tend to grow?
Yeah, we're growing. So one of our best growing cherry tomatoes is Sakura. That's something you could find at Johnny's Selected Seeds. That tomato we actually still have that tomato growing in one of our greenhouses, and it's still producing, and it's basically disease-free at this point, where almost every other tomato we grew ended up with some tomato leaf mold on it. We're also growing sun golds and black cherry tomatoes, and then we're growing French heritage varieties for our heirloom types. So they're basically heirloom quality tomatoes that are hybridized with a more modern tomato. So they have the texture and taste of an heirloom and the disease resistant and production of more modern tomatoes. Those are Marbone, Margold, and Marnero.
Our guest today, Sean Kuhn of Vitruvian Farm, certified organic vegetable and mushroom farm in McFarland. Questions for him, give a call at 800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on WPR News. Sean Kuhn, our guest today from Vitruvian Farms, a certified organic vegetable and mushroom farm in McFarland. They have a grocery store there that they... You run that year-round, don't you, Sean?
That's right.
Yeah, runs it year-round, and those are all organically grown vegetables and mushrooms that he has. Andy wonders, do you run your CSA program kind of year-round?
The CSA, we only run from about the beginning of June to the first week in October or so. So the CSA is kind of a limited season, but there's always the opportunity to come down to the farm store or check out our online store where you can get home delivery all year round.
And Grant emailed to ask if you overwinter parsnips. When they are overwintered, they are heavenly, according to Grant.
That is something that we have not tried. I am aware that you could do that. I'm assuming they get sweeter than normal, but that's not something we're currently doing.
Grace in Ironwood, Michigan, your turn. Hi, Grace.
Hi. I was wondering about the, I'm not sure how to say it. It's reishi or reishi mushroom that I hear has a lot of medicinal purposes.
Reishi?
Yep. Yeah, reishi. Honestly, I'm not sure if that's how you pronounce it either, so no worries there. that's not really a culinary mushroom. I don't think it's very edible in that sense. Mostly people use it to make tea. Or they grind it up to encapsulate it. They grind it up to make a powder to encapsulate it. But I do believe reishi is pretty good for boosting your immune system. And then there are supposed longevity-promoting aspects to some of the compounds that they're finding in that mushroom as well. If people are interested in learning more about some of those beneficial compounds, like I said earlier, I'd recommend doing a Google search for Paul Stamets.
Stamets, how's that last name spelled?
S-T-A-T-E-M-S. S-T-A-T-E-S.
Okay.
Like that.
All right, got it. Let's see. Caller wondered if you've tried the Badger Flame Beets from the UW.
We have not tried growing those. I have heard about them, but we have not planted those yet.
They're really beautiful. When you pull them out of the ground, man, they're pretty. How did the crops do this year for you?
I think overall it was a pretty good growing year. It had its nuances like any other year. Spring was really great for us this year. It seemed like spring just kind of went on for a long time, in the sense that, we had really nice low 70 temperatures for a while. We didn't get too much rain, which is something that's always difficult when you're growing food outside. You can't control how much rain you're getting, but you can control how much irrigation you're putting on the fields. We had a very interesting kind of early cold snap. That was a bit surprising there. I think that was around the beginning of September or so, where temperatures dropped abnormally cold. I think it was like the seventh coldest for that time of year in our area in over 100 years. So some of our outdoor crops were a bit shocked by that. I don't think the basil liked that. But I would say overall, it was a very good growing year.
Do you grow garlic?
We grow garlic, yes.
We talked about growing garlic on the show a few weeks back, and we were going to talk about growing garlic indoors, and I never got around to it. Do you grow them in garlic indoors? And I think you could, I mean, if you can find some garlic for growing, you could do it indoors.
Yeah, I've never really heard of people growing it indoors. We grow ours outside. We actually planted our garlic about 2-ish, 3 weeks ago, or 2 weeks ago, I think. But you plant the cloves in the fall and cover them with some straw, and they pop right up in springtime. So that's something we've never explored growing inside.
Yeah, I had a. Somebody else was telling me you need about 6 to 8 hours of bright sunlight if you're doing it indoors, and maybe a south or east facing window, and moist soil but not soggy, but then you can harvest the greens as they come up, or you could just let them go 10 months and harvest the bulb.
Sure. Yeah, get some green garlic.
So what's the future look like at Vitruvian Farms?
Right now, we've got a pretty exciting project that we're hoping is going to start this next spring. We are hoping to build out a commercial kitchen in our new building, and that kitchen would allow us to start producing value-added goods. So right now in our store, we're selling all of our fresh produce and value-added goods from other producers and makers in the area. This kitchen would allow us to start actually producing our own branded value-added products, which would be really great because it could help decrease waste from food produced on the farm. If we produce a bumper crop of something, we can go ahead and make a product with it that we'll store. And then the hope is that that kitchen space can evolve to offer food service for events that we hold on the farm. So we're trying to... we're basically trying to offer more agritourism opportunities for people in the area. We want to offer a space where people could come out and enjoy a meal and a drink and connect with the land, connect with the farmers that are growing their food, and basically help educate people on the importance of local-based agriculture.
That is very exciting. And we can learn more about that on your website, I'm sure.
As long as everything keeps going the right direction, we should be making some announcements about it in the next couple months.
Very, very cool. One final question. Deb in Edgerton, she commonly used sliced up fresh button or cremini mushrooms not cooked in her salad. Is there a risk of toxins eating it this way?
Yeah, according to Paul Stamets, there is. And that's kind of a common thing that most people, I grew up eating raw button mushrooms as well. The recommendations that I've heard from people much smarter than myself is including button mushrooms, always cook them. Don't eat them raw.
Okay. On that note, it's been a real pleasure once again talking with you, Sean. Thanks so much. We'll look forward to another visit down the road. Thank you.
Thanks, Larry.
Sean Kuhn of Vitruvian Farms. You can go on his, just type in Vitruvian Farms and the site's going to pop up. Great to have him with us. And of course, great to have you listening in today. And a big thanks to our team who produces this show every day, pretty much every day, certainly every day of the week. Clara Kniper, Joel Patnod, Lee Rayburn, Jeff Robbins, part of the crew, executive producer Jill Nadeau, and I'm Larry Mueller, and I want to thank you so much for listening, and please stay with us. Lots more in store here on WPR News.